Wow, I'm really impressed with the patrons who are supporting this show. We're up to $224 each month, and that puts us most of the way towards our $300 goal of being able to cover the professional editing. Our most recent patrons include Samori Augusto, Liam Smith, Matt Stubbs, Ken Wallace, Adrian Rose Brock, Andrew Connell, and Tristan Alexander. Thank you guys so much for being willing to support the show and help us continue to grow and improve it. If you'd be interested in helping out, if you feel like we offer some value in your life, some insight, just something that helps you through the week, head to supportzenfounder.com and pledge $1 a month, $5 a month, whatever you feel like we bring to the table. I'd really appreciate it.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
So I have a question. Why is there a Snowbuddies DVD in your office? It features one husky puppy and five golden retriever puppies.
We totally watch that in the office. We loop it behind us as we work.
I knew you didn't have a real job. I've known it this whole time, and now I have more evidence.
Whenever you walk in and we all act like we're working, does it fool you?
Well, I hope you enjoyed Snowbuddies. It says they talk, they mush, they're snow cool.
It was a white elephant gift and someone brought it in. I think Anna got it as a white elephant gift exchange and brought it in and put it there. That's why it's there.
Yeah, always an explanation, Walling.
So it's definitely time for me to go on my retreat because I've been starting to mull over some more high level kind of direction questions. I know where I'm headed for the next several years in terms of running microconfs, doing the podcasts, and doing Drip. And it feels good to be that focused. But I always like to reflect back and try to find patterns or at least just find some type of explanation for like what I'm feeling at given times. And I've realized that my goals as an entrepreneur or my goals for entrepreneurship have changed over time. And that even back in junior high and high school, it was to make money to be able to maybe buy music or buy comic books or save up for a car or something. And it was purely a monetary thing. And then in the early parts of my career, it was so I would be able to essentially escape salaried employment and consulting because as I transitioned to those things, I really didn't like them. I didn't like having the boss. I didn't like the politics. And frankly, I don't play well with others in a broad sense. I do work well with close friends and people who, you know, work with my personality.
You say that you don't play well with others, but you're extremely relational. You just don't like to work with other people.
Yeah, and that's not entirely true either, because I actually really enjoy working with the team here at Drip.
So you like to choose who you work with. You like to handpick your team because you've always had close working relationships. Even looking back to your consulting years, you've always had a couple of people that have been on your team that you've been close to and worked well with.
That's right. And that's probably the better way to say it is if I was on a team of 20 people, I really liked three of them and I didn't want to work with anyone else. I really liked the three who were really into the work, who loved it, and we all would geek out on it. And we were all reading books and writing articles and appearing on podcasts and doing blogs. And those were the guys that it really was fun to work with. And the folks who were there to clock in 9 to 5, we didn't tend to get along very well.
So people who are stimulating, who are learning, who are helping you to learn, who are enjoyable to be with, but not fun at the expense of being productive.
Yeah. And I think that's a big part of why I love the entrepreneur, the founder community, is that I would say all of us are just out there to like learn and to do interesting things. And so you go to MicroConf and it's like everybody you meet, I feel like I get along with in one way or another because we have this similar drive under us. It's not like, again, working on a team of 20 or 30 developers where it's like, there's like 10% have a drive to do really interesting things and are thinking outside of the room around me. A lot of folks are just kind of thinking about the day-to-day and living their lives. But I think it's that thought of stuff that's outside of where you are. It's trying to impact the world rather than just, and I don't mean that in a grand Silicon Valley sense of like, I want to change the world, but it's like being involved in on Twitter and blogging and like sharing stuff and learning things that are outside of your comfort zone and are outside of your little sphere.
I crack a smile every time I hear you say something like, I changed my work life because I didn't want to work with other people or because I don't play well with others, when the reality is that all the changes in your work life are actually much more about moving toward relationships than moving away from it, whether that's blogging or writing or doing the podcast or building a team. You're way deeper into interactions with other people than you were before. It's just in a different way.
That's right. No, I think that's something I didn't realize when I was knee deep in the salary jobs. I just kept saying, I don't like this. And I don't like a lot working with a lot of the folks around me. And I liked working with some of them, but I kept thinking, I just need to work on my own. And that was my first kind of stage of entrepreneurship. That was my first goal, was to be free of being forced to work with people I didn't want to work with. And I thought that it was the ability to work with no one, period. And as the years have gone by, I realized that that's actually not it. It's to work with the people I want to work with and who really click with me.
So independence and autonomy were the values that drove your first wave of entrepreneurship, so to speak.
That's right. And if you recall, like for several years, I was the solo founder, the micropreneur, the single entrepreneur guy who was going to do it all without any employees. And it was always contractors. And that was a great phase. It was seeking the freedom from something that I didn't enjoy, a tyranny of employment or of consultant clients or just situations that I really disliked. Because when I don't enjoy what I'm doing day to day, when I don't enjoy my job, I am not nice to be around.
You don't have to tell me twice.
And kind of the topic of today's episode is these stages of entrepreneurship, or I guess it's how I think your goals with entrepreneurship can shift over time. And I don't know if it'll be the same for everyone, but looking back in retrospect over the past, let's say 10 years as I've done this, this first phase for me was getting my first revenue from a product.
I just wanted to like make a little bit of an annoying semantic distinction. And in that, I think you're not talking about goals, you're talking about motivations. Because goals are outcome. That's the end of the story. You're talking about the different phases of your work life and the shifts that you've made in your motivation, what has driven the decisions that you've made toward entrepreneurship, not necessarily the goal or the outcome that you're chasing.
That's not an annoying semantic distinction at all. I actually think that's critical. I think we should change the title of this episode because I think I have goal in it right now, but you're right. It's a totally different thing. A goal is something I go on a retreat. I set that for 2016. My goal is to 5X revenue, blah, blah, blah. You're right. This is much more of a deeper thing that underlies a lot of the goals you set. I think the goals you set build on top of this. And I also think that motivation may not even, I wasn't even fully aware of it at certain points until I look at it in retrospect. And I'm realizing that, yeah, motivation is probably a longer term thing, right? It can be permanent. It can be several years. I think I've had three different motivations over the past 10 years.
And just from the beginning of our conversation, it sounds like that first motivation was autonomy. Perhaps is that a word that captures it well, you think?
Yeah, it does.
So this desire to not be building your work life around someone else, but having the freedom and the space to build your own relationships as a professional person and to choose your tasks and choose your time and all those kinds of things. So autonomy was the first one. And then what do you think sort of developed from there?
Well, we talked a little bit about it during the Hittail episode, a couple episodes ago. I made a shift after I had taken some time kind of off. I'd taken kind of a sabbatical where I was just working a day or two a week. And
that's a really nice way to say you were changing diapers for 6 months.
It was kind of a relaxing time, though. I listened to a lot of audiobooks. I read books. I was just puttering around town with the baby strapped on the Bjorn. It was really fun. And then until it wasn't, until I was bored and I realized, okay, so this autonomy thing was awesome for like a year or two. And now what's next? And that's when we had the conversation about, I said, should I just do another small one? How am I going to learn more? And at that point, I started seeking the second thing, which I would call purpose.
Oh, I was going to say, bring home the money, honey.
To be honest, I was looking for something exciting that educated me and this purpose, let's use that word for it. Like, what's my purpose now? Should I just keep going along here, making a full-time income and working a day or two a week? Or should I go after something bigger? But I was having a tough time justifying to myself, all right, I'm going to go work 40, 50 hour weeks. So I'm going to maybe risk some of the money that I've made. And the conversation you and I had, as I said, what would you do if suddenly I made more money? And you laid out all these things of how we could be more generous. We could travel more. We could save for the kids' college. I mean, there were just a bunch of things you laid out, none of which involved buying crap. But that's when I upped the game. And my stage two was buying Hittail. And then I've realized now with Hittail behind me, I don't know that I can quite define what the goal of this stage is. I know that it's a lot about learning, like me basically doubling down, completely focusing on drip, hiring a team. And I love the way things feel right now. I love coming into work and working with my team. And I don't know that I can put a label on where this is. I just know at this point for me, it's like growth. It's like personal growth and it's learning. And there's, I think purpose and relationship are both playing into this because relationships play in with my team in terms of the folks who I'm hanging out with. And then there's still this sense of kind of purpose that I'm trying to learn and teach others. And so I don't know that I can put a direct label on this third stage for me, but I think the point is not what my stages have been. It's that I think as an entrepreneur starting things, I think you're going to have a motivation when you start, and you're going to hit a certain point where you may fulfill that motivation and it may change for you. And that can be very disorienting. I remember it being that way for me. And I've done that twice now. And I think that that's probably the topic for today.
I think I might want to make a second semantic distinction in that I think you've used the word stage, but at least for me, these motivations, they exist altogether. They're just the balance between them shifts. So in the beginning of my career as an academician, I had relationships. I had, you know, I was basically, my job was to mentor students and take care of students and help stimulate their growth. But there was a lot of parts of that job that were not meaningful to me. So I think freedom, purpose, and relationships all exist within both of us and probably within all of our listeners too, but the extent to which each of them are weighted can differ at a different time. I mean, I would love to just have a life of freedom where I wander the globe and sort of sip coffee and drink wine and go surfing and like see art and just am free to wander where my curiosity takes me. However, that kind of life, at least for me right now, doesn't work well with these other values of wanting to have deep and meaningful relationships with people, whether that's creating a community of relationships for my children or my own friendships. They're not totally opposite. I understand that. And I'm not saying you can't be a digital nomad and have deep, wonderful relationships. But for me right now, those feel a little bit in tension. And so I could travel the world and then spend a lot of time with people and have those two things taken care of. And that would be lovely. But at least again, for me right now, that doesn't feel like a very good use of my skills and abilities. And there's not enough meaning driving that for me. So I have my work as a psychologist, which binds me. It's definitely incongruent with freedom. So I have to balance all of those values and find the sort of right focus at any given time in my career life. And right now, I feel like they're relatively well balanced, perhaps a little bit more heavily towards relationship and meaning or purpose, to use your word, and a little bit lighter on the freedom, although I work hard to create spaces for freedom and autonomy in all that I'm doing.
Yeah. And just to give credit here, this concept of freedom, purpose, and relationship, it comes from an episode years ago, 6-7 years ago, an Internet Business Mastery episode. I've never heard him talk about it since then, but it struck me deeply. I wrote it down in a journal and I realized that it resonated with me. And in a lot of the conversations since then with you or online or when folks come and say, hey, I've achieved this, now what do I do? I lay out this thing of this freedom, purpose, and relationship. I think these are three things that are really important. So that's why we're using it in this context. And I wished I had come up with it on my own. You threw out freedom and meaning. And for you, meaning involves purpose and relationship. And so you had it as a two-pronged thing. And then I decided to kind of break it out for this episode as I usually do. But I just wanted to mention that before we move on, because I think it's a good concept. And I think it's something important for founders to think about.
And they're deep ideas too. I mean, that obviously those themes and even this language predates the podcast. And this is part of existential theory and philosophy that is longstanding points of conversation for people, I guess.
Right, right. And so how do you view it then? I mean, you're kind of pushing into your entrepreneurial career and you're leaning into that in certain areas, how do you feel like, what are your motivations, or how do you feel like freedom and purpose and relationship would be fulfilled by pursuing things like this podcast and the consulting and writing a book?
I think all of them have to be involved to some extent in what I'm doing for it to be the right choice for me. So maybe I am thinking of it more like these are values that I want to think through for each decision that I make. So in doing the podcast or in increasing my consulting work with founders, that's a very relational activity, right? It's not knowledge that lives inside of my head or experiences that live inside of my head. It's coming alongside people, building relationships, understanding this community, and seeing what I can do to be supportive and helpful. That's a very, very relational task. I think this work has meaning because of the conversations that we're sparking and the conversations that we are intending to open up that we believe are important to people's health and well-being, the health and well-being of their families, the health and well-being of their businesses, their teams, etc. And then, of course, this entrepreneurial endeavor does get me out of my therapy room and gives me some more freedom and the ability to move around and travel and speak and make my own hours and in some different ways. So I think all three are at play, and that's what makes it feel like such a good fit for me right now. And coming back to our conversation last week, it's pretty in tune with kind of my natural way of approaching the world, which is to be very curious and very creative.
Yeah. And to be clear, you enjoy the therapy room. Like, you like helping people. That's part of your purpose, but it's maybe not something you want to do 40 hours a week. And that's why you're balancing it with these other interests.
I don't really consider myself an entrepreneur.
Why not?
I don't have a business plan.
Do you realize I've never written a business plan in my life?
I do realize that.
You've made two semantic corrections.
Go for
this
it.
Episode. Well, no, I'm wondering what your semantic or like how you're defining entrepreneur, if you consider yourself not one. Is it because you don't have a revenue
model?
Yeah,
I'm not actually, none of this involves money. Like, I'm just not that motivated by money. And that is sort of the business plan question. Like, I happen to have a job where I can do pretty much what I want and find it to be very important and meaningful, and the check comes in, and there's no way I'm going to mess with that for these other values, because I'm not, maybe that's the thing. Like, I just haven't thought about how to make any of this monetize. And I'm not really that interested in that question.
Yeah. And there's a definition of entrepreneurship where you could start a nonprofit and you'd be entrepreneurial. You know, you're being innovative and you're pushing the boundary and thinking differently about something, or you're putting something out into the world that is interesting to people. And some people may argue with that definition and say, well, to be entrepreneurial, you must have a business model and have an exit plan or something. I can see a both ways. I guess in the startup space, in the strictly business space, if you were to say entrepreneur or founder, yeah, it's someone who's thinking about starting a company for profit. But I think there are several places. What about the entrepreneurial friends of ours who go to Africa and they set up dairies and these marketplaces that help people make a better living, and it raises the standard of living of people there who are desperately poor? They are entrepreneurial because they're doing really interesting things, but they don't necessarily have a business model that's going to make them a ton of money. They need to think of a way to make it sustainable. And I think that's more where you reach to, right? Is like, you want freedom, purpose, and relationship, and you want to make it sustainable, but the specifics of the money and of this profit margin, or the profit motive, I guess, is not at the forefront of that. I think a lot of folks, I mean, we've seen people with that mindset, like Derek Sivers is one. His story with CD Baby. He was a musician, and then he started selling the CDs, kind of stumbled into it online, and then everybody, all his friends started selling CDs. He didn't want the profit. He didn't have the profit motive. He didn't know what to charge. He founded a consignment store with charging $4 per CD. So that's what he started. I mean, he just went along, and it happened to get really big. We see the artist from Gaping Void. I forget what his name is, but you got some of the quotes on the back of those business cards. He's the same way. He was just an artist. He's entrepreneurial, and he has a very unique style, and he puts quotes on it. And Seth Godin, you know, he caught Seth Godin's eye, but his name's Hugh something. He never had this kind of profit motive, but I would say he's entrepreneurial as well, because he's putting interesting things into the world that are impacting people. And there's like a sense of innovation to it, I guess. And I see you as more of that kind of
player. I mean, I'm an innovator. I'm a tinkerer. I'm creative. And I have that chronic existential ADD, where I'm just like, what's next? What's the next thing I'm doing? What's my next challenge? What am I learning about? But making the transition into that being a sustainable set of activities that pays for my tacos, that has not yet happened. And because of the nature of my marriage to you and my other skill set, I'm not really driven to even think about that too much right now. I don't know if that's the wrong answer. I feel like that's the wrong answer on this podcast to be like, I'm not an entrepreneur.
No, I don't. There's no judgment. That's the thing. I'm not trying to talk you into stretching the definition of entrepreneur and implying you are an entrepreneur because of this or that. I think it's a really interesting conversation, is that an entrepreneur doesn't just look like the person raising funding to start the next boring invoicing app that's going to make $1 billion or the next social network or whatever it is. I think there's entrepreneurship in many of us. And whether you call yourself an entrepreneur or consider yourself an entrepreneur, I think is kind of irrelevant. I think the point is to put interesting things into the world.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm definitely into doing that. And that's the point in your trajectory where you can be very, very motivated simply by putting interesting things into the world and have a very broad picture of what that's going to look like, because you know you have the freedom from the kind of dollars and cents drive, right? That still needs to happen, but that's pretty well in order. And you have this great network of relationships. You're part of a community. You've helped build a community of people who are motivated and interested in similar things. And now you got to do this great work of like, what do I want to put in the world? And that's a really, really cool and exciting place to be.
Legacy. I think Chris Guillebeau talked about it in his book. He used the phrase legacy. He talked about entrepreneurship. It was his book,
The Art of Nonconformity.
Yep. And he talks about starting the business and then thinking differently. And then like one of the last chapters was legacy. And I remember reading it and being like, ah, whatever. And he's like, what do you want to leave in the world? How do you want people to remember you? What good do you want to do? And this is not, again, not some big thing of you're going to leave $60 billion to cure malaria or whatever, but
although that is cool.
Well, absolutely. But not all of us can do that. Not all of us have the means to do it. But I think that there is value in starting to think about that at a certain point when you're at that. And I guess this comes back to those motivation kind of stages I was saying, like my first one was freedom. Second one was kind of leveling up. And then my new one is like, I'm ready to push things forward and I'm starting to think longer term of what I want to do over the next 10 to 20 years. What does that legacy look like? To be honest, I think that coming back to the entrepreneurial conversation of you kind of saying you don't know if you're an entrepreneur, but you have these skills and you put the interesting things into the world. The fact that we're married and that we're doing this podcast and that you're talking about a book and I'm encouraging that. And I think that that's actually a role that I'm starting to play more and more, is helping foster entrepreneurs and helping nurture them. I've done some angel investments. I'm doing some advising. I'm doing stuff like that. And I think that that's becoming a piece of my role. And it's nice that you may have never done this on your own in the way that we're doing it, but me being here helps with that, right? It helps guide you to doing it in a sustainable manner, I guess. I guess I'm saying, I think we balance each other out pretty well, because you had an idea for this podcast and I had an idea of what this podcast should be. And they were actually different. Yours tends to be more like research and psychology based, and mine tends to be too businessy. There are already plenty of business ones. And the fact that you pull me away from this intense business focus, what you might say entrepreneurial, because it's always thinking about the money and the tactics and the marketing and the this and that stuff, which you don't think about or care about, I think is what makes this podcast unique. And I think that's why we built a listener base so quickly, is because your voice is a unique one in this space. And it, you know, like I said, I guess it's pulled me away, because I would do a similar one to all the other podcasts I listen to, I think, if I was just left to my own devices.
I think in both of us, the holiday season really stirs up all of this reflection, like all of this checking in. Okay, we finished this year. Another year's coming. This is why we do our retreats at this time. This is, we have lots of conversations like this over our holiday hot chocolate. But what I hear, I think with you selling Hittail this year, it's really raised the question of what's next. And this new time and space to continue pressing into the relationships and the mentoring that you're doing to support other entrepreneurs. And I think I'm on your list of people who have an interesting voice or motivation to do some things in innovative and creative ways, but who are not quite sure how to implement that in a way that keeps the lights on, or in a way that's organized and streamlined. But I think when we come back to all of the things that we are doing and have done, that we're always thinking about these questions of what is meaningful and what provides purpose. What are the relationships that we're building and pursuing? Who are we pouring into and connecting with and being vulnerable with? And then how are we maximizing our freedom and autonomy to grow our own individual abilities to think differently, to spend our time in ways that leads to the other things that are meaningful and relational and interesting? And what are we putting out in the world that's uniquely from us individually, from us as a team, that we're equipped maybe to do that other people aren't, or whatever drive that lives in us that we just can't totally ignore? And I think that's that individual autonomy, freedom thing. So whether those go in kind of a stage order or whether they are constantly in balance or in tension maybe differs across people. I think we think about that a little bit differently. But going into a new year or a new phase with a sense of what's driving or motivating our choices is so, so important. And I think this conversation outlines how we're trying to keep those things in tension or where we're giving our focus to. So whatever it is for you as the listener, hope that you're having these kinds of conversations with someone, whether that's your spouse or your sister or your mastermind, thinking through what are you after? Not just what goals you're chasing down, but what do you really want in your life? And how are you making choices to move in that direction? Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.